ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 7, Text 28. Yeshang Twantagatang Papam Chananang Punyakarmanam Te Dvandva Moha Nirmukta Bhajante Ma Drudha Vrataha. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful reactions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Purport. Those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it is very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Only those who have passed their lives in practicing the regulated principles of religion, who have acted piously, and who have conquered sinful reactions, can accept devotional service and gradually rise to the pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then gradually they can meditate in trance on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the process of being situated on the spiritual platform. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness in the association of pure devotees, for in the association of great devotees, one can be delivered from delusion. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that if one actually wants to be liberated, he must render service to the devotees. Mahat sevang dwaram ahur vimuktehe. But one who associates with materialistic people is on the path leading to the darkest region of existence. Tamo dwaram yoshitam sangi sangam. All the devotees of the Lord traverse this path just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. All the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. The impersonalists do not know that forgetting their constitutional position as subordinate to the Supreme Lord is the greatest violation of God's law. Unless one is reinstated in his own constitutional position, it is not possible to understand the Supreme Personality or to be fully engaged in His transcendental loving service with determination. So what is being stated in the verse that we just read? Could anyone give the gist of that? Bhagavad Gita verse. I just read it twice. Can anyone? You've learned the verse. Anyone who hasn't learned the verse?
Once who has done good deeds in previous life and in this life.
You've also learned it. All right, that's good, you've learned the verse. Yeah, go on, say it then.
And if he associates himself with the devotees, then he will reach the Godhead.
All right, let's read it again. Srila Prabhupada's translations. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Here Lord Krishna speaks of punya karma, jananang punya karma nam. So you've all heard of punya karma. Who would like to give some examples of punya karma? What is punya karma? examples. Yeah, good deeds, but some examples. Giving charity to build the temple. So if you give charity, for instance, to the Multiple Sclerosis Society, or that's punya karma, is it? Charity for building hospitals, that will give you punya karma. Schools, so people can learn about Darwin's theory. That's not punya karma. There's much confusion about this. If you give charity to help people to get bodily health so they can go on forgetting Krishna in a healthy way rather than an unhealthy way, that's not punya karma. You become involved in their pap. Therefore, one should be very careful about giving charity. Charity should be given to brahmanas, persons who will use it, who are fully engaged in pious activities. If you give charity to someone who's engaged in sinful activities, you become, what's that they say, an accomplice to the crime. You become involved and it actually becomes sinful. Anyway, that wasn't the point I wanted to discuss. There's some query came by email, so I thought I'd just, it's an important philosophical point, and it's something that we should understand very carefully. Before I get into the question, I'll quote some other verses from Gita. Later here in Bhagavad Gita, here Krishna says, those who have engaged in punya karma, they can take to my bhakti, bhajante mandira vrataha. Now elsewhere in Gita, Lord Krishna says, manghi partha vyapashritya yepi syuv papa yonayaha, striyo vaishas tata shudras tepi yanti parangatim. Krishna says that even those papa yoni, those whose birth is considered due to some sinful reaction, and he gives the example, Stri, Vaishya and Shudra. Women, Vaishya, those who are born in Vaishya family, and Shudra. If they take full shelter of me, Krishna says, they can also attain to the supreme destination. But then, after that, he says, in the next verse, King Puna Brahmana Punya Bhakta Raja Shyastata Anityam Asukam Lokam Imam Prapya Bhajasvama. Next, he says after this, that then what to speak if even those of sinful birth can attain me, then what to speak of those, King Punar, what then? Literally, what then? King Puna Brahmana Punya. What of those who are pious Brahmanas and devotees, devotee Rajarshis, rishis who are kings who are just as good as rishis, who in this miserable world where everything is temporary, having attained such a position, they worship me. So Krishna says that even those of sinful birth can attain me, then what to speak of those of pious birth? They can certainly attain me. Now, here Krishna seems to be emphasizing that one who has a pious background of piety. We didn't answer what's punya karma. I was just saying what punya karma isn't. Generally, it's thought that punya karma means building hospitals and schools, but definitely building schools where they teach Darwin's theory, and schools where they teach sinful things. If they don't teach to surrender to Krishna, then that school is, in Prabhupada's language, a slaughterhouse. So you don't get punya by building slaughterhouses. And schools, hospitals, If you have a hospital where people simply come to get medical treatment so that they can go on with a life of sense gratification, then again you become implicated in their sinful life. So punya comes from giving charity to persons who are engaged in pious activities, someone who's more pious than you. You may think, well, I'm helping someone who's in a difficult situation, but we don't see someone who's on the wrong path, by helping them to go on the wrong path, they fell off the path. So if you put them back on the wrong path, it's not really helping them. So, of course, people have a completely materialistic outlook, and they think, well, I really helped someone. Someone is very poor, so I gave him the opportunity to earn some money. But if you don't give spiritual knowledge, then you'll earn money and use it for drinking, and just like all the beggars. In India, there's so many beggars. In America, also. But they won't accept small amounts of money. Means they're not really desperate. And many times you see on the train, you give them food, they won't take it. They don't want food. They have enough food. They want money for booze and other sinful activities. So, punya karma accrues from giving to pious persons. Actually, dan, the idea, I am giving, one shouldn't even think I'm giving. If one gives to a pious person, or one who's engaged in spiritual activities, one shouldn't think I am giving. One should rather think that I am fortunate to have the opportunity to, this money which has come to me, which I'm using for maintaining my materialistic life, I'm very fortunate that this person is kindly accepting it, because traditionally, Brahmanas don't accept money from anyone and anywhere. Brahmana, I don't mean these persons who have got some name Brahmana, but persons who are actually engaged in Brahminical activities, which if we see the Brahmin caste in India today, that means less, significantly less than 1% of the so-called Brahmanas in India are not specifically engaged in Brahma Dharma. They're engaged in Shudra Dharma, just like if you're an employee, then technically you're a Shudra by vritti, by occupation. Or if you're engaged in business, then you're not really a Vaishya according to the tradition. Vaishya should also be pious, but this modern cheating business, and that's not really sad Vaishya, but anyway, some kind of Vaishya. It's certainly not Brahminical Dharma. And if they join the army, then you could be something like a reflection of a real Kshatriya. Although the real Kshatriyas and an army man of today, yes, there's a significant difference. So a real Brahmana won't accept charity from sinful persons. One has to be qualified to be able to give charity. One has to earn the money in a pious way and act in a pious manner himself. And then the Brahmana might, out of his mercy to you, accept your donation. So we shouldn't think, well, I gave so much in charity, I'm helping this person. If one thinks that I am giving, then immediately the benefit that might accrue from giving is diminished. But rather, if one thinks I'm having the opportunity to offer something, then and begs, please, you take this, you purify me, then one will get the actual effect of dakshina. Dakshina is not exactly the same as dana. A different word. Dakshina means making an offering. Dana means to give. Dana, the idea is that one in a privileged position is giving to one in a less privileged position. Dakshina gives the idea that one is being fortunate enough to make an offering to one who doesn't really need it. Dakshina is given to one who doesn't need it for himself. He takes it to purify someone else. For himself, he doesn't need anything. And of course, he can take and use it in Krishna's service. But for himself, he's not. It's not a profession. So, anyway, coming to the point of this. Now, Krishna says here that those who are pious, they can take to bhakti. Those who do punya karma. So, punya karma, does that lead to bhakti? It's what Krishna seems to say here. But then in a very famous verse of Rupa Goswami, he states just the opposite. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati. You like to come and sit here?
I'm waiting for my
son. But you can't learn from there. Knowledge goes down, not up. Mm-hmm. If you stand above, you can't understand. You have to stand under. Not understanding means standing under, not standing over. Mm. So, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita matihi kriyatam yadi kuto pilabhyate. Tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam janma koti sukritaya na labhyate. Rupa Goswami Prabhupada says, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita matihi, which Prabhupada has translated as, what's the translation of this? Anyone know? Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, I got this term, this Krishna consciousness, this term is taken from, that's a condensation of the Rupa Goswami Prabhupada's term, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita matihi, Krishna consciousness. In Indian languages, that's translated in short as Krishna bhavana. Antarashtriya Krishna bhavanamrit sangha. So Krishna bhakti, there's Krishna consciousness. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita matihi means matihi, consciousness, which is Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita. Consciousness that is imbued with, inspired with Krishna bhakti rasa. Kriyatang yadi katopi labhyate. He says, if that is being sold in any place, if it's available in any place, he's giving a simile. If that can be obtained in any place, no, actually it's a metaphor, then one should purchase it. What is the price to purchase Krishna bhakti? Who can say? Well, Rupa Goswami says to purchase it, so. How many dollars? Yeah, eagerness, that's right. Tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam. The only price. Mulyam ekalam, lolyam. It means not just eagerness, but intense greed. Otherwise, janma koti sukritaya na labhyate. Otherwise, in millions of births of sukriti or pious activities, one cannot attain Krishna bhakti. Now here Krishna says, yeshang tvantagatang papang jananam punya karmanam tedvanva mohanir mukta bhajanti maundrita vrataha. That one who's, persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and who are free from the duality of delusion, can engage in my devotional service with great jurata, means fixity of purpose. But Rupa Goswami says, Janma koti, again speaking about previous lives, sukritaya nalabhyate, cannot be had by sukriti. So sukriti and punya gives the same connotation, doesn't it? You all know this word, sukriti? Sukriti means, su means good, or so kriti means action. Yeah. So it gives the idea, sukarma, punya karma. Janma koti sukritaya nalabhyate, cannot be had even in millions of births. So this question came up, and there are quite a few verses quoted in this regard, supporting verses. Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhag sadhur eva samantavya samyak vyavasito hi saha. Krishna says that even if one is sudurachari, means very badly behaved, if one worships me, one who worship, we have the word worship, but anyway, bhajan. Bhajan means engaging oneself fully in Krishna's service. If one performs bhakti to Krishna with great seriousness, bhajate mam ananya bhak, sadhu, he should be considered a sadhu. Then, other verse. So, that means that even if one is sinful, if one takes to Krishna bhakti, one is to be considered sadhu. So, one, Krishna says here, one who bhajate mam ananya bhak, even if one is very badly behaved, if he worships me with great ananya bhak, with one-pointed determination, he's to be considered a sadhu. So this suggests that bhakti can be taken up even by a sinful person. Of course, devotees are not sinful. So that means that one who takes to bhakti, it doesn't mean they'll go on being sinful. That after this, Lord Krishna says Kshipram hi dharmatma. That very quickly, such a person, they become fully purified. So, the point is that one can take to bhakti even if one is sinful, but he doesn't remain sinful. There are many such instances. Devahuti says to Kapila Dev that Ahobata svapacho togari anyajiva agrivartate namatubhyam. Tepus tapus te juhuvu sasnaraya brahmanucha nama grinantiyete. She says, how wonderful it is that even persons born in families of dog eaters, that if they are constantly chanting your holy name, if your holy name is constantly on the tip of their tongue, then such persons are understood to have performed all pious activities. They've already been to all the holy places, they've already taken their bath in all the sacred rivers, they've already studied all the Vedas, they've given charity, they've done everything possible that could be done pious. And you may say, well, how do they end up in a family of dog eaters? But that's not to be considered, Devahuti says, because if they're chanting your holy names, even if they're from a very fallen and lowly background, they're not to be considered fallen and lowly. Dog eating is pretty low, isn't it? Cow eating is pretty bad too. Fish eating is the worst, according to Manu, because the fish eats everything. So, but that should not be seen. That should not be considered. So again, by this, it's seen that svapacha, it's considered that one is born in a family of dog eaters due to past sinful activities. But, Kapila Mata, Devahuti, she says that one, even if born in such a family, they're considered to be most pious. So it seems to be a contradiction. I'm just bringing out these verses. We'll discuss it afterwards, the apparent contradiction.
What other verses do we have here? Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktira dhokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatna supersedati.
Very famous and important verse, in which it is stated that the param dharma, or the topmost dharma for all living beings, is that by which one engages in full devotional service, that is ahaituki, that is without any cause, without any personal motive. So here it can also be understood that ahaituki means that bhakti has no material cause. It doesn't depend on karma, jnana, or yoga. That is, it's also stated in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna bhakti hoy obhideya pradhana, bhakti mukha nirikok, karma, yoga, jnana. That for attaining Krishna, the process is devotional service. Bhakti. Bhaktya mama vijanati, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. I can be known by bhakti. He never says karma mama vijanati, jnana mama vijanati, yoga mama vijanati. He says only by bhakti. There are many such statements. Lord Krishna says to Uddhava, what is that? Nasankhyam dharma mudu. Nasadhyati mam yogo. Nasadhyati mam yogo. I'm not remembering exactly now. But he says to Uddhava, yata bhakti mamajita, that processes such as yoga, dharma, yajna, they do not please me in the same way that bhakti does. So bhakti, how does bhakti come about? Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti comes about from bhakti. Bhakti is completely transcendental to the modes of nature. Mangchiyovya bicharena, bhakti yogena sevate, sagunan samatityaitan, brahmabhuyaya kalpate. One who transcends the three modes of material nature is established in devotional service. So one who is within the three modes of material nature, those modes, they cannot give rise to bhakti. Rather, the modes of material nature bind one in material life. So punya karma, that may be considered part of sattva gun at best. Many times in rajagun. Okay, it depends on one's motive. If one is desirous to go to swarga, and one that's one kind of punya. By punya, one can go to swarga. Te tang bhuktva swarga lokam vishalang shine punye martya lokam vishanti. By punya, one goes to swarga loka. And when the punya is finished, one falls down again. So going to swarga and bhakti are quite different things. Going to swarga, or the attempt or the desire to do so, that is within the realm of karma. Punya karma. So, alright, there are many other shastric pramans also. But how is this to be understood? Krishna says those who have acted piously in punya karma, they can take to my devotee, they can take to bhakti. And king puna brahmana punya, he says, those who are pious brahmanas and bhakta raja shayastata and devotees. Anityam asukam lokam imam prapya bhajasvamam. Having attained this situation, they worship me. But then Rupa Goswami says, janmas koti sukritarina labhyate.
Nasadhyati mang yoga dharmang sankhyang tu udava. So it appears to be a contradiction how Krishna is saying this. And it doesn't seem possible. Dharma, this bhakti being completely transcendental to the modes of nature, surely it cannot come about by any activity within the modes of nature. Rather, one has to become free from the modes of nature. Then one can be in devotional service. As long as one is within the three gunas, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna, as long as one is within the modes of nature, then one cannot even begin to understand what is transcendental. One certainly cannot experience that. Therefore, Krishna recommends Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna, be free from the modes of material nature. So, how are we to understand this? I suggest you move here, because probably more people will come, and then you'll have to move again. How are we to understand this? What is being discussed here? So this kind of topic, this kind of thing, which discussion and argument can go on for days, or years, or lifetimes, generations. Because it's a very subtle point. Now, it would appear that just by your all being here, that there is a certain kind of punya that brings one to bhakti. Because we don't see anyone who's not of Indian background here. You're all born in India? Anyone not born in India here, apart from this fallen Mlecha Yavana who's speaking to you all? Now, you're all born in India. So we find that people from India, they tend to be more interested or more attracted to Krishna bhakti than those who are not. Especially those who are born in Hindu families. So it appears to be a more pious birth. The birth seems to have something to do with it, doesn't it? So that's due to some punya. Of course, one could also say it's also due to some punya karma that Bill Gates is Bill Gates, because he had sufficient intelligence and luck, you could say. Luck means daiva. The dice fell his way. He was able to have the vision to visualize Microsoft and actually put it into action. So he must have some punya karma behind him to do so. To be born in America could generally be considered to be better result of more punya than to be born in India, from one standpoint, from the economic standpoint, which is why you're all here and not in India. It's why? Not because of the weather, I don't think so. India's hot, but the heat is better than the cold. At least most Indians would agree to that. You're here for you're here for In God We Trust. Or rather those pieces of paper on which In God We Trust is written. Of course, nowadays money is little plastic cards which you put in a machine and then... But more or less everyone's here for money. Not more or less. Holy. There's no other reason that you all came here. Of course, some came for marriage, but because they were married to someone who's... But that's why people come. So it would appear that in some ways Americans are more pious than Indians, because punya karma leads to Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta and Shri, birth in a high family, what does that mean? Generally that means birth in a Brahmana family or Kshatriya family, but what's the value of being born in a Brahmana family nowadays if you have to carry dead bodies or clean toilets or whatever to make a living? Now the tables are turned, and especially in Tamil Nadu, practically Brahmana is backward class. There's no facilities. You can't get a job, and you know, if you're lucky, if you can carry some dead bodies. There are. In Tamil Nadu, they can't get jobs because the odds are stacked against them. So it would appear that birth in America is better, isn't it? It's economically better than to be born in an average Brahmin family in India, or any family in India. And because Janma Aishwarya, wealth, there's more wealth here. And education. Education means education in Vedic knowledge, but nowadays education means people, that's what you're saying, punya, you're thinking punya means to build schools, but education is fully focused, or largely focused on how to become a technical Shudra. All this, it's not a joke, I'm not saying it to insult you, it's just, if we speak from the Vedic perspective, all this technical matters, it's work of Shudras, that's all. To be a computer engineer or any engineer, it's the work of a Shudra. It's not the work of a Brahmana. It may require intelligence, but technical work is that of a Shudra. So modern education is aimed at, it's technical knowledge. There's no higher education. What are the values of life? There's value-oriented education is practically zero. It's not there. The main thing is how to get a degree so you can earn money. So from that perspective, again, the general opportunity seems to be better there in America. Shruta, and at least the literacy rate is higher here than in India. And Sri, well, good bodily looks, well, that's everywhere. Everywhere there are, in India and in America, both. Some people are good looking and some not. Although in India they're very interested in fair skin. So here the people are fairer than any amount of fair and lovely cream can do for an Indian. Now they have fair and lovely cream for men too. I'm not using it. Maybe I need dark and lovely. Funny, isn't it? Those with white skin, they lie on the beaches and they have these, what is it, infrared lamps to try to make them darker? Suntan, and then try to make them darker. And those who are dark, they're trying to become lighter. And anyway, it's all stool underneath. So, as one of our godbrothers was saying, people lying on the beach, they're to become brown and tanned, they're becoming stool pakoras. They burn brown on the outside and inside it's stool. So, interesting observation. So it seems that in America, the people have more, they're getting the results of punya karma in some ways. Although from the aspect of spiritual inclination or Krishna conscious inclination, it appears that the Indians are ahead, or in general, dharmic inclination, we can say. The attraction to understand the Vedic knowledge. Veda Narayan Prabhu was speaking to a Christian preacher lady on the plane, and I didn't bother because, you know, I thought let him get mixed up in that, because you know, it's, they don't have the punya to understand even basic common sense. For all their fanatical belief in what they believe to be God, they don't have common sense to understand even basic points. Like, what was that one? They say, only by Jesus. And what about all the people who never heard of Jesus? What was her reply to that? That Jesus will help you somehow or other. You can see God in nature. But then what about all the people who never heard of Jesus? Well, I just asked the question. I didn't bother waiting to listen to her reply. What did she say? There's no reply. Was that the one she was stumped on? And she was looking in her book trying to find an answer. Eventually, yeah, but according to their philosophy, so-called philosophy, if you don't believe in Jesus, then you burn in hell forever. But what about the people who never heard of Jesus? And when I was about 12 years old, having been raised in a Christian family, it just struck me that what is this teaching? If you don't believe in God, you don't believe in Jesus, you burn in hell forever, and God's all merciful, is a total contradiction. What kind of religion is that? They teach you burn in hell forever. You make a mistake, and then you have to be punished eternally. What kind of mercy is that? So the result of my Christian education was that I became an atheist. So I thought, that's nonsense. I can't accept that. Then after some time, not very long, I thought, actually there must be God, but they don't know who He is. And there must be punarjanma. It means He'll give you another chance and another chance and another chance. He won't condemn you eternally. At school we were singing this song, God speaking, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, I shall smite him ad infinitum. It's an American Negro song. Can you understand what it means? I shall smite him. Smite him means to smash them. Ad infinitum, ad unlimitedly. And this is supposed to be God. A very strange concept. But anyway, it's useless to speak to such people because they just think that you are an emissary of Satan. Actually, that's what they think. Not that there's any such person as Satan that exists, but they've imagined that there's a competitor to God, which is another kind of atheism, to think that God has a competitor, that God is struggling with Satan. It's a hard struggle. It's very childish theology. So spiritually, you are from the spiritual point of, on the spiritual ladder, you are better situated. That's why Prabhupada, more than once he was asked, is it better to be a worshipper of Kali, which in the Vedic culture, that's a low level. I mean, those who are high level, they are vegetarians, they're in sattva-gun. Whereas Kali Upasak means a lot of blood. They're offering goats to Kali and eat the so-called prasadam. Although Prabhupada commented that the people who think that they're taking Kali prasad in the form of meat is not actually Devi Prasad, because Kali is the wife of Lord Shiva and he's a Vaishnava. He only takes Prasad, Krishna Prasad. So she only takes her husband's remnants. So she only takes Krishna Prasad. So those who think they're getting the Kali Prasad, what it is, she doesn't eat the animals that are offered to her. But all around there are Bhut, Preet, Pishach, all the ghastly beings, they take it and you get that prasad. That's your Kali prasad. So it's within Vedic culture, but it's a very low level. So more than once the question came to Prabhupada, is it better to worship Kali? It means to worship various demigods, of which a low manifestation is worship of Kali. Is it better to worship various demigods, or which is polytheism, or to be a Christian and worship God, one God. Prabhupada said it's better to even to worship Kali than to be a Christian because you're in within Vedic culture. So even though it seems that by worshipping one God you're in a more pious position, but practically speaking, those who are within the Vedic culture, at least they, even though the traditionally, at least in Bengal, there's always been a tension between the Vaishnavas and the Shaktas, the devotees of Krishna and the worshippers of Shakti, Kali. But still the Shaktas, they're more likely to respect sadhus, more likely to say the names of Krishna. Whereas those in Christianity, although they purport to worship God, they think that Krishna consciousness is a manifestation of Satan. So they're further away from Krishna, actually. And we can't, those who with this fanaticism reject Krishna consciousness and think it's all something to do with Satan, which they have this imagined Satan, then in the name of God, they're actually blaspheming him. They don't know who he is. And when presented with it, they reject that. So practically speaking, they are worshipping Satan. Their idea of God who throws people into hell eternally, burns them. So they're worshipping some imagined person. That's not Krishna they're worshipping. God, he's not such a harsh person, such a merciless person. So they have a concept of God as, even though they say he's very kind, but their concept is of someone actually very unkind. So what is punya? What is Krishna referring to here? Now punya, obviously then that comes just from this example, we can see this comes on different levels. One can get punya, it's a kind of punya, actually to the full term should be punya karma phal. The result of pious activities, one is born in America, especially if one is born in a well-to-do, or you could say even a middle-class family in America, that is a kind of what we call good karma. One has good economic opportunities. It's considered a good situation. That's why we find so many people are emigrating from all over the world, even now, to America. We don't find many people emigrating from America to India. Those who do, do so for the spiritual opportunities that India offers. There are not, of course, there are not so many like that. There are some. I'm practically an emigrant, more or less, from Britain. I more or less live in India. There aren't many. But on the other hand, you are pious people in as much as you're attracted. Your attraction to Krishna consciousness is easily awakened, comparatively speaking, compared to Westerners. I think we can safely say those who are preaching Krishna consciousness here in Seattle area, they, from their experience, you can more or less say that it seems to be easier to awaken people from Indian backgrounds to Krishna consciousness than from Western backgrounds. That's a broad statement, but generally we can say that's true, isn't it? And we see that everywhere, in Canada and America and in Britain, that people from Indian backgrounds, specifically from Hindu backgrounds, are naturally inclined to take to Krishna consciousness at some level. So that's another kind of punya. That's the point here. And Krishna is saying, yeshang twantagatang papang jananam punya karmanam. When Krishna is speaking of punya karma, that leads one to bhakti, that specifically, here the punya doesn't mean punya executed for material rewards. Here, punya means activities in relationship to bhakti. One who has performed bhakti in previous lives, they are going to take to bhakti in the next life. If one has taken up bhakti seriously, but has not completed the course, then shuchinang shrimatam gehe yoga brashto bijayate. Those who have fallen from the path of bhakti or not fully successful in the path of bhakti, they can take birth in a pious family, so they can continue their course of bhakti. Krishna describes there in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Taptratang buddhi sangyogam yogam labante purvadehikam, that persons who in such a situation in a pious family, then again they come in contact with Krishna consciousness and they naturally revive the consciousness of their previous lives. That tendency naturally awakens. They come in contact with it and they take it up. Of course, we see some people from Western countries also. They also take up bhakti very easily. So Prabhupada was asked about this. Prabhupada, he several times said about his disciples that you were all devotees in your previous lives and you've taken birth in the Western countries to help me spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And devotee asked Prabhupada, well, how can that be, Prabhupada? Because we're engaged in so many sinful activities. How could it be that we're pious from previous lives? And Prabhupada said that because you took up Krishna consciousness as soon as you were presented with it, that shows that all these other activities, they were just external, that your actual attraction was toward the Krishna consciousness. There's also a narration in Vrindavan, two of Prabhupada's sannyasis, they were visiting the Radharaman temple and they were taking darshan with obvious bhakti. And the pujari, seeing this, he congratulated them, said, oh, you have such nice devotion for Sri Radharaman. So he said, as a result of this devotion, giving his blessing, he said that in your next life, you can be born in India and you can worship the deity like me, like this. So they went back to Krishna Balaram temple, where Prabhupada was staying, and narrated this to him, this incident. And Prabhupada said, you should go back to him and tell him that as a result of your pious activities in worshipping the deity, you will be fortunate enough in your next life to take birth in the Western countries and preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. Better situation. Prabhupada saw that's a better situation. So what is punya? Well, actually all terms, many of these terms used in Shastra, they can be understood on various levels, just like dharma. What is dharma? That's a big question. Many people, but ultimately dharma means the atma-vritti, the propensity of the soul. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote his book, Jaiva Dharma, comparing various religious systems with Krishna consciousness. That the dharma of the jiva, just like the dharma or the swabhav means nature, vritti means propensity. Swabhav means nature and vritti means how one acts according to one's nature. So the swabhav, of the natural swabhav of the jiva is to serve Krishna. So like that we could say that the dharma of sugar is to be sweet. If sugar is not sweet, it's not sugar. It's probably salt. Sometimes in a hurry that mistake is made. You make beautiful laddu or rasgulla. Looks very nice. Okay, give me five. Don't give me one. Give me five. And gobble it up and boom. It's made with salt instead of sugar. So sugar must be sweet. Of course, it may be that if we have jaundice, we taste it as bitter. But that's not the. It doesn't mean that the sugar has changed, but that our ability to appreciate it has changed. But then, when we, but to have jaundice is not natural. When we come to our natural position, then again we taste sugar as sweet. Or chili. If chili doesn't burn, if it's not hot, then it's not chili. Chili must. It's put in the sambar and rasam and all these things. It's not put there to make it cool. That you have buttermilk at the end, or whichever order you take it in. First you burn and then you cool down. Of course, they put chili in the buttermilk also. So some people like to burn. But chili is hot, must be hot. So dharma, actual dharma, means the dharma of the jiva in the same way, the inseparable defining characteristic of the jiva, just like the inseparable defining characteristic of sugar is sweetness. So the inseparable defining characteristic of the jiva is that he must serve. And the jiva in his purified state serves Krishna. Otherwise service must go on. Every jiva is serving. The propensity is there to serve others. We're bound to do. We cannot but do so. So the dharma of the jiva is to serve Krishna. So that is dharma. That is bhakti. Whatever else is called bhakti is not actually bhakti. We hear the term desh bhakti. But there's no such thing. Or Shiva bhakti. But that's also not exactly a correct term, because bhakti means the bhajaniya vastu. The actual object of bhajan, which is translated as worship, is Krishna. So bhakti means for Krishna. Dharma ultimately means, we can say stri dharma, raja dharma, dana dharma. These are all discussed in Shastra. But the mool dharma is Bhagavad dharma. Atma dharma means jivesra rup hoi Krishna nitya das, to serve Krishna. Mamai vangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. The jiva is intrinsically and irrevocably part and parcel of Krishna. So his duty is to serve Krishna. So all these terms, that many terms, they can be understood on various levels. Vidya, we are talking about schools. What does vidya mean? That is described in the Upanishads. There are two kinds of vidya. One is called paravidya and the other is called aparavidya. Aparavidya means knowledge of this material world. And paravidya means knowledge of the spiritual world. So actual vidya means that which gives us illumination. It makes everything clear. By vidya means the process by which we understand, isn't it? The child sees as we see. The child sees the land, the trees, the sky. But by learning, we can understand how all this is interacting at the meteorological level, at the atomic level, how people are interacting. We can learn from sociology, from political science. The child sees and the educated person sees, but they see differently because by education we understand the workings, how it's going on. However, by ordinary education, we don't fully understand it. We get at best a surface understanding and very often a misunderstanding, just like Darwin's theory. They've explained how all these species are existing. But due to that's based on a wrong assumption. So, aparavidya, or knowledge of this material world, must by its very nature, because it's based on pratyaksha, it's based on sense perception, and anuman based guesswork based on sense perception. They don't actually have the real knowledge of what's going on, so they must make so many mistakes. Even if they're talking of God, they must make so many mistakes. Even if they have some insight that there is God, but they must make so many mistakes because they don't have paravidya, actual knowledge from Shastra. Actual knowledge from Shastra, but actual knowledge means that it's given in Shastra. The knowledge itself is ultimately even independent of Shastra. Shastra is the medium by which that is delivered. Of course, Shastra is none different from Narayana. So in that sense, the knowledge and the Shastra is the same, whereas the knowledge and the books you have there, that's always subject to change. In the material world, it's always subject to change, but actual knowledge is not subject to change. So this is another example. Vidya means knowledge. There's knowledge on the mundane platform, which isn't really knowledge at all, because it entangles us in material life more and more. And actual knowledge leads to liberation and leads to understanding of our relationship with Krishna. So, vidya on one level means knowledge of this material world. It's generally understood to mean that. But real vidya means that knowledge which takes us beyond the material world and establishes us in our real position of service to Krishna. Dharma, that's generally understood to mean how to act piously in this material world. But the real meaning of dharma is sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja, to give up all these material so-called dharmas and come to bhagavad dharma, atma dharma, jaiva dharma, bhakti dharma, or Krishna consciousness. So in the same way, punya is generally understood to mean that which elevates us to the heavenly planets, gives us opportunities for material janma aishvarya shuta shri, birth in good family, wealth, good education, and bodily beauty, and bodily health. But real punya means that which brings us to... let's just backtrack a bit. Punya means activity performed that generates our future well-being, isn't it? That's why you may say, why should I give in charity? I earn the money, I should spend it for my own enjoyment. If I give it away to someone else, then they can use it and I can't use it. So it doesn't seem to make sense. You're earning money so you can use that to enjoy yourself, but then you give it away to someone else. Then why should you do that? You give it away with the idea that by doing so, I shall benefit in the long term. It's an investment. It's not that one who gives charity thinks that I won't, they're not just giving it away, but they think what I will get. So you will either get future opportunities for material enjoyment, or many times people give charity, they become philanthropists, with the feeling that they want to feel good, I'm doing something good for others, and to become famous as philanthropists. There's a certain gentleman in Seattle of the name Bill, who is, he's becoming famous as a philanthropist. He's got so much money that he doesn't know what to do with it all. And so he's doing good things for people of the world. He's sponsoring projects such as research into drugs to combat malaria, which, if it's successful, will stop so many deaths a year in Africa specifically, and then it'll add to the huge population boom in Africa and it'll spawn another whole set of problems. That's in material life, when you solve one problem, you make another. So then he can spend a few millions, he's not spending billions, but millions, on the next problem. That's it. You're always trying to solve problems in the material world, but there's no end. Even if you eradicate malaria, there's still hundreds and thousands of problems. You can go around trying to solve them all one at a time, but in the meantime, another problem will catch up with you, which is called death. It comes to everyone. So, why should you give charity? Because the idea, it's like an investment. I get some benefit from doing so. Have to run? So this is punya karma. On the mundane platform, means one has faith that by doing so, one will get a good result. If that's stated in Shastra, that if one gives even to an ordinary brahmana, who's not very qualified, you get your investment back in the next life. Or if you, according to the level of the qualification, you get more back. If you find, that's why Bali Maharaj became very happy when he saw Vamandev coming, because he looked like a very highly qualified brahmana by his appearance. He was Tej, he was shining bright. It means he's a very qualified brahmana. He's on a high level of brahminical attainment. So to give to him means I'm going to get so much punya as a result. If you give to an ordinary brahmana, you get something back. But if you give to someone who's very learned, self-controlled, not greedy, that means you give to someone who's not greedy, they don't use it for sense gratification. They'll use that only for fully spiritual purposes. So your donation gets, or whatever you want to call it, dakshina, that gets turned into a fully spiritual matter. Whereas if you give to these sitting above, kids are up. So this, if you give to someone who is just posing as a brahmana but uses the money for sense gratification, you don't get any benefit. But if they can channel the funds into spiritual activities, then you get the benefit. You're not able to perform act. You're not able to be on such a high level, but they do it for you. That's why the brahmana actually it's his mercy that he accepts. He accepts your donation because he has to take and purify some of your lower level activities. That's why traditionally brahmanas they didn't like to take, but they would just take little from persons who are very pious. And higher level brahmanas, they wouldn't accept charity from anyone. They would just in the field, if there are some grains lying there, or in the marketplace, there are a few grains lying here and there, they would take that. Or they'd live in the forest and just like this. Or by this system of bhiksha, which is very... Bhiksha doesn't mean you go all day collecting, but seven houses, and whatever they give, that's finished. Well, that's particularly Madhukari. So they were very careful. They didn't accept it from anyone. So, punya on the mundane platform means that which gives us a better mundane situation in future. But real punya means that which is for our... Punya means activities performed now, pious activities performed now, so that we get in future a good result. So real punya means that which is conducive to bhakti. Because the only real good result is bhakti. And actually the so-called good karma, Sukriti and Dushkriti, they're both, Dushkriti means sinful activities. In one sense, they're both on the same platform, because if we perform pious activities with the aim of enjoying this material world in a future life, that means we're actually denying our real situation of service to Krishna, which is inherently sinful. To deny that we, or to act in any way except that which is for the service of Krishna, is inherently sinful. So the so-called punya is actually pap. That's why Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave the example that Sukriti and Dushkriti, pious activities and sinful activities, they are like dry stool and wet stool. They are both contaminated. Stool is contaminated, unless it's the stool of a camel. So it's contaminated. We may say dry stool. People pass stool in the field, and if the pigs don't get to it first, it dries up. So you may say that's better than wet stool. It doesn't stink so much, and if you happen to tread in it, it's not so messy. So dry stool is better than wet stool, but it's all stool. Stool is contaminating. It may not stink so bad, but anyway, it's contaminating. So real punya means activities that give rise to bhakti. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has analyzed different kinds of sukriti. There are different, generally sukriti means activities performed that will help us to go to the heavenly planets or have a good birth in the next life. So that's called bhukti unmukhi sukriti. Pious activities that are performed with the aim of enjoying the material world in future, even then in a pious way. Such persons are pious. They don't aim to become rock and roll stars or gross meat eaters. But they want to remain pious and good and enjoy this material world. So that means like the devas in Swarga, or many people in India like that. They're pious, they want to be good, and they want to enjoy this material world, but not in a grossly sinful way. But that doesn't mean that it's the same as being surrendered to Krishna. Often we see people there from a good, pious family, as good as there can be in this modern age. And if their son starts going to the ISKCON temple, they become a little bit afraid. Because they don't mind, they say it's good if he goes to the temple, but if they go there, they don't know, it's too much. And they say, yes, you do bhakti, but not too much. Going to the temple is good, but once a month or once a week maximum. Why so much? So you can see that they're that kind of punya. It's not really punya in the intrinsic sense of the term. They don't really want to please Krishna. They're going to the temple, but it's what can I get from Krishna? It's not how I can serve Krishna. And if they're going to the temple and praying, Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. But then if their son wants to give his life to Govinda, they'll become very disturbed. Of course, many such people, gradually they come to appreciate Krishna consciousness also. But we can see that their punya is compromised, or it's hypocritical actually. So this bhukti unmukhi sukriti, we shall be good, we shall go to the temple, we shall pray to God, we shall put some money in the box, and we'll be good and we'll get God's blessings so we can have a happy life, which they think is in the material world. But actually, there's no happiness in the material world. And such people, if due to their past activities, they experience many difficulties. I'm going to the temple and still I'm pious and I'm good, but still my child was born mentally retarded and having so many financial problems, and this is all, what's the use of all this? So I'll convert and become a Christian. Something like this. Or they don't, they become an atheist. That I did my bhakti very well, but still God gave me so many problems. That means there's no God. Or there's no real God. They measure. Just like in, you measure in the, you have your resume, you go to, you apply for a job. How good is your performance? So they measure God. How good is His performance? How well is He serving me? And if He's not doing a good job, they fire Him. Go find another God. Just like you. So you've been sacked as God. Now we have to find another God. So this apparent Sukriti, it's self-motivated. Bhukti and Mukhi Sukriti. And there's Moksha and Mukhi Sukriti, where one performs pious activities with the aim of becoming liberated from this material world. That will be a little different than one may do meditation in the Himalayas, austerities, with the aim of becoming liberated from this material world. Then there's Bhakti and Mukhi Sukriti, in which one performs activities for the satisfaction of Krishna. And there's also one category of Bhakti and Mukhi Sukriti. Let's discuss this a little more first. The Bhakti and Mukhi Sukriti and the ordinary Punya Karma, they may appear to be the same. Just like people who are interested in getting material enjoyment in future, they may observe Ekadashi fasting. Because it's stated, if you perform Ekadashi fasting, you'll get this blessing and that blessing. So people may do so. But devotees, they perform Ekadashi fasting for the pleasure of Krishna. Devotees of Krishna do everything for Krishna's pleasure. Krishnarte akila cheshta. Loka ki vaidiki vapi yakriya kriyato mune hari sevanukula eva sabhaktim karyam icchata. Devotees, they perform all activities, either shastrically ordained or just regular activities. Whatever they do everything which is favorable for the service of Krishna. So many of the activities of those who perform punya karma and those of the devotees are the same. Rising early in the morning, taking bath early in the morning. These are pious activities. Reciting shastra. You'll find many people, not nowadays, but previously they would recite Bhagavad Gita, one chapter every day. In Bengal, even many people, they perform kirtan, taking it as a mundane pious activity. If there's, in the villages, if the monsoon is coming very late, then they'll do kirtan for rain. But not for Krishna's pleasure. But that you send the, with, this is something good we're doing in praise of you, now send the rain. We're suffering so much in the heat, we don't have any water, send the rain. So, but devotees perform kirtan solely for Krishna's pleasure. So that's the difference. Now there's another kind of bhakti unmukhi sukriti, which is agyata sukriti, which means that even without one's knowing, one performs activities which are conducive to one's taking up bhakti or becoming advanced in bhakti. If somehow or other a dog, a jiva in the body of a dog takes mahaprasad, then they take it something to eat, some food. You throw some chapati and they they gobble it up. They wag their tail. They're very happy to get. So for, they have no idea that this is worshipable, prasadam. They don't have any concept. For them it's food. But they get the benefit of honoring prasad. So at least they'll get a human life in the next birth with some attraction to Krishna, at least in the form of prasada. So they made tremendous progress just by that. Or one may give to a sadhu some dakshina, thinking, is a sadhu? They have no idea of his spiritual position, but they think, it's pious for me to do so. So sadhu means devotee. Devotee takes the money and uses to print books, Bhagavad Gita as it is. So people think, I'm giving to a sadhu, and I'll get punya karma. They think their motive is for material enjoyment, but they get the result of at least an increment of advancement in bhakti. Now, if one gives to a devotee for printing books for Krishna only out of the motive that let us please Krishna by doing so, one gets more benefit than if one gives with the idea I'll get material enjoyment by doing so. But nevertheless, by giving to a devotee which is used for propagating bhakti dharma, one gets the benefit, at least the beginning benefit of serving Krishna, by which one becomes inclined to take to Krishna consciousness. Why some people are more inclined to take to Krishna consciousness and others less so? Because those who perform pious activities in relationship to bhakti, that a purification of heart takes place. An initial attraction to Krishna becomes possible by those who have had contact with bhakti. Therefore, Prabhupada writes in the purport, all the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. Devotees move in this world just to give people the opportunity to come in contact with bhakti. Those who are more eager to take up bhakti, they'll receive direction from the devotees on how to do so. But even those who are far away from bhakti, they are given an opportunity to interact with devotees, to hear from them, and somehow or other, if they serve a devotee, their bhakti dharma begins. There's a well-known incident when Prabhupada was at his first temple at 26 Second Avenue in New York City. Who's been there? Yeah, that's a holy place. We like to visit Vrindavan, Mayapur, Puri. That's a holy place. It's a very special holy place, 26 Second Avenue. Prabhupada was there with no initiated disciples. There were at that time some hippies were coming. So Prabhupada was lecturing. You can hear, it's recorded. Prabhupada was recording. He himself was recording. No one asked him to record, but he thought, let me record, in future people will hear. That time no one had the sense to record. So Prabhupada recorded for himself. He didn't have much money, but he bought a tape recorder to record his lectures. So what happened was, a drunkard came in. And he makes some noise, as drunkards are wont to do. And he had brought some rolls of toilet paper, and he put them down and went out. He's out of his mind. He doesn't know what he's doing. Now, Prabhupada has no use of toilet paper, because civilized people, Prabhupada, in one of his early letters back to India, he wrote that the people here, they use toilet paper. He gave it as an example of how uncultured people are, that they wipe their backside after passing stool, and then they pull their pants up and walk out. And there's no question of taking bath or any such thing. So it's horribly uncultured. How Prabhupada could tolerate that, because he could not tolerate that people were living like that, so he wanted to purify them by giving them Krishna consciousness. It's very difficult to tolerate living with such people, but Prabhupada tolerated it because he could not tolerate that they were suffering so much in lack of knowledge of any human culture, what to speak of Krishna consciousness. So, Prabhupada, he had no use for toilet paper. But he commented, he has begun his bhakti. The man's in drunkard. He doesn't know what he's doing. But somehow he shuffled into the storefront temple and put down two rolls of toilet paper. He made an offering, a donation. So Prabhupada very kindly accepted that and acknowledged that. And therefore, that jiva in such a fallen, suffering, deluded condition of an alcoholic, not just an alcoholic, but a bum in the street, Prabhupada accepted. Yes, now he can make some advancement. So devotees move in this world to give people the opportunity to make advancement. And actually those who are pious enough to be born in an elevated culture, which more or less means Indian culture and to a lesser extent other, just like in Thailand you can find that people respect sadhus, but then it's well, there's something. If devotees go there, at least they're superficially respected. So by doing so, by offering respect to sadhus, by taking prasad from them, people, they become pious, they become inclined to bhakti. So this Vedic culture is very valuable because it helps one to elevate to bhakti. Especially if one gets the association of devotees. Devotees move in this world to give the opportunity to others to take their association. People are part of being pious is to offer respect to devotees. But if you offer respect to offer respect to sadhus and sannyasis and brahmanas. So if one comes in, yeah, that's bad. That's dushkarma. Playing your, what's that called, cell phone. Please turn it off. Otherwise you lose your pious activities. That's a heavy curse. Yeah, turn it off right away. Quick, quick, quick. Before someone phones you. Diverting our attention from Krishna Katha to Gramya Katha. So punya, here, ordinary punya, that also becomes the platform by which one can come to real punya or bhakti and mukhi sukriti. Devotees give that opportunity. Pure devotees, they give the opportunity to make pious persons, materially pious persons, into spiritually pious persons. That's why one in Vedic culture, even if they're worshipping different demigods, they're on a better platform than those who practice professed monotheism, but who are outside the Vedic culture. So punya, king puna brahmana punyas, bhakta raja shriyastata, anityam asukam lokam, imam prapya bhajasvama. Krishna says, anyone can take to my bhakti and go back to Godhead, even if they're born of sinful background. But then if one is from a pious background, and he gives the example of brahmanas, person born in Brahman family, kshatriya family, bhakta raja shriyastata. Specifically if they're devotees, then they can very easily take to Krishna consciousness. So actually that pious background, if one takes to Krishna consciousness, that becomes a good asset. Because one has brahmana means, he has Vedic knowledge, so he can use that for preaching Krishna consciousness. But it can also be a distraction. One can think, well, I'm a very high class brahmana, I'm better than others. So it depends very much on attitude also. Dinere adhik daya kare bhagavan pandit kulin dhani bara abhiman. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that Bhagavan is more inclined to those who are of apparently bad or lower birth, because those who are kulin, high-born, those who are very learned, and those who are very wealthy, they generally tend to be very puffed up and proud also. So, when I was asking, what is the price to become Krishna conscious, someone offered humility. Yes, humility, but greed or the strong desire to do so, that is given by Rupa Goswami. But then without humility, there is no bhakti. That is essential. It's the nature of this material world. One has punya, one performs pious activities, then one acquires a high position, and then one tends to become puffed up and fall down. This is how it goes on. One, by punya, one is born in America, and then you become very, then you become very proud, and you perform sinful activities, and then we find that great empires, they become very aggressive, and then they conquer others, and then they get broken down. One empire comes, and then it goes, just like America. Now they think they're invincible, we can go anywhere and we can smash people. But in course of time, America won't be the great superpower. They come and they go. Now Indians are fascinated with the prospect of India becoming an industrial giant. But even if they do, then it won't last. Because in this mature world, everything comes and goes. So one may be a very pious brahmana. But by that pride, however, even if one is expert in reciting Vedic mantras and one is very clean and pure, if one becomes proud of that, pride leads to a fall. Nahush Maharaj was a pious king who was selected to take the post of Indra because Indra, due to his pride, had insulted his guru and therefore he was thrown out of the position of Indra. So Nahush was a pious king who was selected to take his position, but he made the same mistake and he insulted the brahmanas and he had to become a snake. So he was a pious king, he became Indra, and then he became a snake due to pride. And Sada Dambam Hidvar, Raghunath Das Goswami says, always give up pride, arrogance. So by punya, one can take to bhakti. But punya means bhakti, or that punya which leads to bhakti. Ordinary worldly punya, without any touch of bhakti, only keeps one in the material situation. But if one is fortunate enough to come in contact with devotees, then that punya becomes a great asset. That becomes the asset by which we can take to bhakti. Or even if we don't have any punya, any inclination to it, if we come in contact with devotees, that is more valuable than being very pious in the mundane sense. Just like persons in the Western countries who were of very sinful life, those who came in contact with Prabhupada and they became devotees, they're better situated than those pious Indians who did not take to bhakti under Prabhupada's guidance. When devotees... The devotees were coming from the Western countries to India. I remember in the 1970s in India, so many people would say to us, you cannot be a Hindu, you have to be a born Hindu. In your next life you can become a Hindu, in this life you cannot become. So I said, oh, we didn't want to become a Hindu. Mm-hmm. We're servants of Prabhupada. We want to be servants of Krishna. We don't. But they're thinking that, you see, we're very pious and you've come from a very sinful background. So unless you're born into a Hindu family, then you cannot be a Brahmana, you cannot be a Kshatriya, you cannot be a Vaishya, or even a Shudra, unless you're born into that situation. So misunderstanding. And they're thinking that, yes, it's nice these lectures are chanting Hare Krishna. It's nice they're doing. Some are thinking, no, you're not qualified. To another saying, nice you're doing. It's nice you're doing. As a result, in the next life, you can be born in a good Hindu family. But devotee, they transcend, they can go directly to Krishna. They don't have to wait to be born in a pious Hindu family. It's not required. So even without material punya, if one gets the association of a pure devotee and takes advantage of his instructions, he can immediately jump over all lower levels. So even if one is born in a dog-eater's family, if one is chanting the holy names, one is considered to have performed all pious activities, even if one didn't do so in a previous lifetime. Because that's considered complete, because one's received the result of performing all these pious activities is complete if one actually takes to bhakti, surrender to Krishna. But if one performs all pious activities and doesn't surrender to Krishna, it's not actually very beneficial. It's dry stool. That's all. So the actual essence is bhakti. Just like, what was that? Some devotees were asking Prabhupada, that Prabhupada, it's said that one has to perform pious activities in order to take to bhakti, but we never performed any pious activity. It was so sinful. I said, I gave one answer that Prabhupada gave one time before, that those are all superfluous. But on another occasion, when Prabhupada was asked this, Prabhupada said, I have created your pious activities. That even if you don't have any background of bhakti, by the association of pure devotee, one can become infused with bhakti. Although generally, one who has an inclination to bhakti, he will have the inclination to take advantage of the association of devotees. Devotees are so powerful, even someone with no inclination, they can become fully Krishna conscious. But generally one has to have an inclination. It's just like iron and a magnet. A magnet does not attract wood. So someone who doesn't have that, whose propensity to surrender to Krishna has not even started to be awakened, they're generally not attracted to the devotees. Whereas those who have, their attraction awakens. Of course, a pure devotee is so powerful that even someone who's completely sinful and with no attraction to Krishna, he can awaken that, because that is the dharma of the soul, atmavritti. He can cut right through all the kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, and awaken the soul. So are pious activities required to take to Krishna consciousness? According to Rupa Goswami, no. According to Krishna, yes. What does this mean? Mundane piety can never in and of itself bring us to Krishna. But generally speaking, one who has a background from a previous life of Krishna consciousness, at least at some level, they're the ones who are more likely to take to Krishna consciousness. Which is partially the reason that you're here. Only partially. It's not because you have some pious background that you're here. That's not the only reason. Because if devotees weren't preaching Krishna consciousness, then you could be so pious, but still you would be in illusion about the goal of life and how to attain it. So more important than one's piety is tedvandva moha nirmukta, to become free from the illusion of considering oneself this body. And that knowledge we can receive from devotees. So that's some insights into what can be a complex topic. And as I said, these topics, they may be discussed for a long time, even over generation to generation. According to the Madhva Sampradaya, they have the same idea. You can only be delivered if you're born into a Madhva Brahmin family. That's what they say. But then why was Madhvacharya preaching? If the qualification is you just have to be born in his family. There's some contradictions there. Anyway, Hare Krishna. There was a question that came up on this BVKS Sangha, and no one answered it, so now I answered it to some extent. Hare Krishna. Thank you for so patiently listening to this philosophical discussion. It requires some kind of piety to have an inclination to listen to such things. Generally, people like to listen to lots of interesting stories, and they think a good speaker is one who tells lots of jokes. But personally, I'm not much inclined to that. If people are interested to hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, which is beneficial, they may get some benefit. If not, well, there are plenty of jokers. And, you know, there are certain swamis in India who are called great speakers because they mix up shlokas with jokers. A shloka and a joke. But Krishna consciousness is not a joke. It's not